The great Twitter drama of 2022 is revolving around spam bots. That's the stated reason for Elon Musk to delay his takeover of Twitter. So, is Musk right to be concerned? What are spam bots anyway? And what is Twitter doing about them? Those are just a few of the questions for this week's Reliable Sources podcast. So, let's cue the music. I'm Brian Stelter, and this weekly podcast is our chance to go more in-depth, talking with media leaders and newsmakers about how the media world works. Every day, there are new headlines about Musk and his plan to take over Twitter, a plan that he now says is on hold due to the proliferation of spam bots on the platform. This is something Musk knew about when he entered into the deal, so it's confusing he's bringing it up now. But it raises a lot of questions about what spam bots actually are and what, if anything, can be done about them. I wanted to know more about this, so I started Googling, researching, reading, and one name kept coming up over and over again. Kathleen Carley is a computer scientist at Carnegie Mellon University specializing in dynamic network analysis. What is that? Well, she's here to tell us now. Professor, welcome to the program. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
I think we're going to have to start at the most basic level. Treat this like the first day of class. What are bots? What are bots?
Well, Brian, bots is a term that is short for the word robot, and they're just simply automated accounts. So they may look like a normal user to you if you go in and look at your Twitter account, but the information that is coming out from them, the number of times they tweet, what they say, et cetera, is all run by a computer program.
And how long have there been bots? Is this a relatively new phenomenon?
No, there have been bots for a long time. I don't know exactly when they started, but they could have started as soon as Twitter started. And there are bots on lots of platforms. It's not just a Twitter phenomenon.
Right. Yeah, this is everywhere. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, is it?
Oh, not at all. In fact, bots are used for many things that are important to people, such as when a tsunami is hitting, they're used in places like Indonesia to simply tell you over and over again, send out the alert, you know, a tsunami's coming, go to the shelter, things like that. They're also used very benignly, like there's ones that simply like tweet out the time of day or a verse from the Quran, you know, and there's other ones that are used for marketing. So they're used for many, many things.
Right. So this is basic technology. We probably all interact with it, whether we realize it or not. And yet so much of the press, the attention around it is around spam bots, right? So that's really, now we're getting more specific. And tell us about what spam bots then would mean.
Well, what they're looking at there often are the ones that are sending out lots of messages to try to get people to do a certain thing or to think about things in a certain way, such as to buy or sell a piece of cryptocurrency or to hold, or ones that are out there just simply retweeting the opinions of opinion leaders or politicians or celebrities. So they're ones that are out there that are really affecting the conversation, largely by the frequency with which they tweet and by just continuously sending out messages.
Yeah, this is where it gets worrisome. If there are all these inauthentic accounts that are retweeting a certain point of view, making that point of view seem more popular and more powerful than it really is, then we're getting into territory that gets chaotic. And how much of this is there? We're going to get into the percentages later and Musk's claims, but this really is a plague all across the internet, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yep, we see this happening all the time. And in particular, you see it with hot products, with anything that is political in nature. And we also see it around a lot of conspiracy theories and so on.
When did you start to study this phenomenon, not just the spam bots, but bots in general?
When we started studying social media as a way to look at information diffusion, we started studying bots right away because they were part of the conversation.
Information diffusion. That's a great phrase.
Yeah. It's like, how does ideas spread from you to me to other people?
Hmm. Right. Right. Have there been certain news events or points in history where this phenomenon has gained more attention? Like, I'm thinking to myself, the 2016 election and Russia's use of social media to interfere in the U.S. election may have been one of those moments where this issue gained more salience.
Absolutely.
Is that true? Are there others like that?
Yeah. Not just the 2016 election in the U.S., but then after that, in, you know, all of Western Europe, Canada, et cetera, there were just a flood of bots involved in almost every single election and trying to influence people and change the point of views. And then during COVID, we saw huge numbers of bots that were being used around conspiracy theories, promoting those. A lot of bots promoting various points of views on vaccination, face masks. We saw lots of bots during the reopen campaigns here in the United States.
Right. You found in 2020, along with your colleagues, nearly half of accounts tweeting about coronavirus were likely bots. And were they tweeting all the same kinds of messages, or were they contradicting one another? How do we describe that?
Well, that was specifically during the reopen campaigns. And mainly, a lot of them were tweeting the exact same messages. So, and those would be things like, this is a scam, this is a fake, vaccines don't really help. They're, you know, we need to reopen America, you know, and things like that.
Were you able to figure out where that energy was coming from? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, there has to always be a human behind all these robots.
So it's often difficult to figure out exactly who's behind the various bots because, you know, we just don't have the kind of technology and resources often to do that easily. It's easier actually to set up a bot than it is to figure out who's actually behind it.
Right.
But sometimes you can get the feeling for the kind of group that might be behind it because they'll be sending out messages that are consistent with, for example, the way the Russians send out messages, or they're consistent with a particular marketing firm, or they're consistent with how the Chinese send out messages. But, you know, finding out exactly that, you know, a particular person is behind it is we really can't do with our resources.
But I like the way you framed that like it's easier to set one up than it is to take it down or figure it out or figure out who's behind it.
Right.
So why are these so easy to set up? I mean, I'm thinking to myself, you know, it's easy to set up a burner Twitter account if I want to just have a lurker account, you know, have a second account on my phone. But the activity that you were describing and studying, this is, tell me if I'm wrong, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of accounts being used like a robot army. So is it that easy to do? Is it too easy?
Yeah, it's very, very easy to do. Wow. I mean, you can go and get the code for doing this online. You can set one up, you know, in less than an hour because you already have the program. You don't have to know much about programming to set up. You can also go out and buy them. And so some marketing firms will actually sell you bots to, you know, help you promote your brand and so on.
Right. So you just do like bots for hire just to promote a new product, to pump a new product for a week or two.
Right.
So is the problem from your perspective, is this issue more commercial than political? Because I think for Musk, a lot of this is about politics, but the spam bot problem overall, is it mostly commercial or is it mostly political propaganda? Or maybe there is no most.
I don't know if there's a most on either of those. My group personally studies the political side and the strategic side much more than the commercial side. So I know more about the political side. I don't know if that's most or that's more than the commercial side or not, but I know it's the same technology.
The way that I often thought about the phenomenon of actually fake news in 2016 was it was either for profit or propaganda. And the profit to me is less interesting than the profit than the propaganda motive. So I think I'm with you on that. There's always going to be people trying to make a quick buck through the internet, but the political messaging feels more important to understand and to unpack. So how do you all do that? Let's take 2020, the coronavirus case, seeing all these this bot activity. How are you even able to track and study it and know what accounts are likely bots?
Well, the way we identify bot accounts is through machine learning algorithms that we then augment with the help of humans. It's kind of a what's called a human in the loop approach. So we have a bunch of data sets that have been marked as to whether or not they contain bots. We build a program that kind of finds the best fit model to that. Then we run it on tons and tons of data. And then we see what it says are bots. And then we check some of those against verified accounts and known humans and so on. And we tried to do a very conservative estimate from that on what we think are bots.
Twitter CEO says that some accounts that look like bots are actually human beings, that you would be surprised by how many of these seemingly robotic accounts are actually real people. Have you found that as well?
Actually, we found two classes of that, both of which are interesting. The first is that celebrities, pick your favorite movie star, their account will often have very much bot-like characteristics. And partly that's because they have a group of people sending out their tweets for them. So it's not just one person, but also partly because now and then they do use some kind of automated assists, which also give it a bot-like characteristic. The second case we found, which we've just been working on lately, is we find what we call cyborg accounts, right? So like part man, part machine kind of idea. And these cyborg accounts are very cool because sometimes they will score extremely highly as bots, and other times they will score as completely human. So they will be like bot-like for a while and do things, and then a human will take over, change what it's doing, and then it'll become bot-like.
Oh, interesting. It is a cyborg.
Yeah.
So I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, why can't we just have an internet where everybody just has one account and they verify their identity and we all live happily ever after? Is that the most naive thing you've ever heard?
No, it's. I don't think it's naive. I think it'd be great. But I think there's several things standing in the place in that are making it difficult for that to be the case. And that one of those is the fact that we don't have these kind of universal IDs so that you can know that one person, one account. Instead, you can get multiple accounts just by using different IDs.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. The second thing is that in order to have, each person with one account, you have to have certain type of privacy guarantees. And it's very hard to give those with the current internet system. So I think those two things stand in the way
of my fantasy of just a simple version of Twitter.
People
would like lurker accounts. There are reasons to have multiple accounts, but when you get into this environment where, as you said, you can have a bot army retweet a message, make it seem popular when it's not, that actually distorts political conversation in a very real way. And I don't need to tell you that. What are other examples? So Russia in 2016, coronavirus in 2020. Are there any others on that timeline that we should emphasize here before we get up to 2022 and Elon Musk? Are there other examples that have really highlighted the pernicious influence of bots?
Well, we saw them in the Canadian election in 2018. We saw it in the midterm elections in the U.S. We also are seeing bots associated with the Ukraine war. There's a lot of them associated with that. So those are other ones I would mention.
And what are they posting about? What are they posting about the war?
Well, there's ones that are pushing a pro-Russia side, and they have multiple messages there, and they're sending out messages such as the U.S. and NATO are weak and won't help, that the Ukraine is just a bunch of Nazis, which is not true. They also are sending out messages that Russia is going into the Ukraine, went into the Ukraine originally to basically stop the U.S. bioweapons labs. Those are three examples that they're pushing. Then you've got bots on Ukrainian side that are basically being used for doing things like crowdsource the war, collect money for the people to buy munitions in Ukraine. When there's other ones for telling people that they're all right and where to go to, help out. So bots are used in a variety of different ways in that war.
And this is what makes people like me paranoid or cautious when using social networks, right? When I see all of this, like, I'll get really, you know, selfish about this for a minute. When I tweet out something and I get all these hateful replies within a few minutes, and I can't help but wonder if those are real humans or whether there's something else going on there. So what do you say to the average Twitter user, or I don't know, maybe the average public figure who uses Twitter, when that happens, when they feel that they're targeted by something they can't tell if it's real or not?
I would, one is that I would say, go have someone check it and run it through some bot checkers first off.
Do those actually work? Do those actually, yeah?
They do work, but they're not infallible. So oftentimes it's useful to run a couple different ones on it. And if they both agree, then chances are it truly is a bot. The second thing is that if you try to get accounts removed because they're causing problems for you, it actually takes longer and takes more effort on your part to remove an account than it does to set it up in the first place. So it's very difficult at the moment to get rid of these bad accounts. Like there was this one freelance journalist who was sending out messages, who's Irish, and sending out messages about the fighting in Syria. And all of a sudden, her number of followers exploded, right? And if you looked at them, they were these sock puppets with very pornographic images and so on. And so she was trying to get rid of them. They were all bots. And she realized it would take so much time, she wouldn't have time to report the news.
Right. Just blocking all the accounts.
Exactly.
Okay, you said sock puppet. Is there a difference between a sock puppet and a bot?
Oh, a sock puppet, I'm just referring to the kind of images they're using. So like if you know how you have the little image on Twitter that's like a face or something?
Yeah.
But there's like a default one that's just like a little gray kind of silhouette. That's a sock puppet.
Okay, got it. It can be so discouraging about public discourse because as someone on TV, by all means, I want every real live human to give me feedback. And even if it's nasty, even if it's a meme of my disfigured face, fine. Like send me whatever you want, as long as you're a real human being. And I think when you get sucked into these social media worlds, you start to wonder, is this coordinated? Is it inauthentic or is it real?
Right.
The flip side of that though, Professor, is it's become an insult to say, oh, well, you're just a bot. You're not a real person. You're a bot. And I see liberals doing that. I see conservatives doing that. It's become, you know, this way. It's a put down.
Yes,
to say
is.
You're a bot. And so how do we, there's a balancing act here between being skeptical when you see lots of hate and harassment online versus being so dismissive that you assume it's all bots, right? You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, it was interesting that you used the example of hate. In fact, we find that most of the accounts that use hate language in them are not bots. Most of those are people, but that bots are sometimes used to retweet it. So a lot of times, if you look and see if something is a retweet, you know, bots are more likely to retweet hate messages. They're not the ones who send it in the first place.
Ah, right. But it's about the amplification. So when you're breaking down the techniques of bots, is the amplification more significant than the actual creation of content in the first place?
Absolutely. So there's many kinds of bots. So the ones that do amplification, for example, there's like little armies of these sitting around, say, the Russian state media, Chinese state media, and various conspiracy-based websites, and basically looking for certain content. And as it comes out, they just retweet it out like crazy. And then humans see that content because now it's flooding their airways. And then humans retweet it out at the second level. So those do this amplification. But the other kind of bots are what I think of as brokers. And what they do is they will send out messages where they mention lots of people in them. And it will actually link, cause those people to be recommended to each other, to follow each other. And those kind of broker bots are actually used to like do things like build groups or to make someone seem like an opinion leader or to get someone to be. So they don't just affect the content. They can also literally affect who is talking to whom and whom is seen as an opinion leader.
Wow. Now, does that get into the term bot swarm? Is that a bot swarm or is a bot swarm something different?
So the term bot swarm has several different meanings to different people, but usually when they're talking about a bot swarm, the most typical thing is that you have a set of bots, all of which are doing the same thing at the same time.
And so what's an example of that for political purposes?
So if I have 30 different accounts that are set up, and when a politician sends out a message, those 30 accounts all retweet that same message at the same time. Or a few days later, they all send a different message, like, you know, meet at Joe's for the protest march. That would be more like a swarming activity.
I see. Swarming. That actually sounds less consequential or complicated than the cyborgs you described earlier. Like, there's certainly there's different levels of sophistication to this.
There's certainly very much different levels of sophistication. But think about what that bot swarm might do if you don't know that it's a swarm. Like, when you log into Twitter, you're seeing a list of the most recent tweets, right? Of the folks you follow. Well, if you're following half a dozen of these and you don't know that they're all coordinated, all of a sudden you're seeing basically the same message, maybe with one or two words differently in it. And you say, oh, gee, everybody thinks this. And so you get this feeling in you that everybody knows or everybody thinks something, that there's widespread consensus, when in fact there isn't.
Right, right. And then it impacts Twitter trends, et cetera. Okay, so just a couple more terms to define, and then I want to get into Musk and the details. We've been using the terms bots, spam bots. Another term that gets used a lot is fake accounts. How should we think about that within this conversation? Is a spam bot a fake account? Is that a different term?
So I don't think the term fake accounts has a solid, well-agreed-to term.
Yeah, it may not be a very useful term at all.
Yeah. But when we think about inauthentic or fake accounts, we're often referring to not just the bots that are out there, all kinds of bots, but we're also referring to things like deep fakes.
How do deep fakes factor in here? I'm not sure how.
So a deep fake is also computer generated, but one of the differences between it and like the Twitter bots is it usually has an image that has been doctored. So it looks like you, it talks like you, but it's saying stuff you'd never said.
Yikes.
Right? So I can put a video like that into a message I send, and I can have a bot send out that. So now I have a fake account, and it looks like the owner of the fake account is saying this, but that owner is this deep fake.
I know you study this objectively, but I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, it sounds like this is just getting worse.
Well, the good news is that, you know, these are very uncommon still.
You mean the deep fakes part?
Yes.
But the bot activity in general, the notion that, you know, I can command a bot army to manipulate public opinion. Do you see signs that that's waning, that's becoming less common?
I don't see signs that it's less common, but I think people are getting more leery of it. So that means that the strategies used have to become increasingly more sophisticated.
Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly the likes of Elon Musk are aware, are leery. So let's get into that right after the break. Quick break here on the Reliable Sources podcast. More in just a moment.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number smart beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number smart beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature-balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon. and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Life wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back here on the Reliable Sources podcast. I'm Brian Stelter, speaking with Kathleen Carley, professor in the School of Computer Science at Carnegie Mellon University, a specialist in all things bots. So, Professor Carley, we're talking because Elon Musk has made this a very hot topic this month. He tweeted out on May 13th saying the Twitter deal, his takeover of Twitter, was temporarily on hold, quote, pending details supporting calculation that spam / fake accounts do indeed represent less than 5% of users. So let's unpack that. He links to a 2-week-old story from Reuters about Twitter's own estimate that spam and fake accounts comprise less than 5% of the daily active or the monthly active users. So Twitter's been making this estimate for years. Mm-hmm. And yet he suddenly uses this as a reason to put his deal on hold. And lots of analysts think he's really just trying to renegotiate and get a lower price or maybe back out altogether. But if we just take him at his word for a moment, is he right to be concerned about spam bots on Twitter?
Yes, I would want to know how many there are. I mean, there are a lot, and I'd want to know how you find them and how Twitter finds them and who they think their actual paying customers are.
Right. You want to know how many of these accounts exist and is it really 5% or is it less or is it more? So have you and your colleagues studied the same question of what's the proportion of bots on Twitter?
Not over all of Twitter. We've only done it relative to specific events and specific issues of concern, in part because there's just so much Twitter and there's so many users. So we don't have, you know, we're not in the basis of processing all that huge amount of data. We process a lot. We have terabytes of data, but not that much.
Maybe only Twitter has the capacity. I mean, the CEO said the other day, we suspend over 500,000 spam accounts every day. That's how many they say they suspend every day. When you read that, did that surprise you or did that sound, that sounded like the scale of the problem?
I thought, great, I'm glad they're suspending them, but it's actually probably higher than that.
It's probably higher than that, right? Well, so that's why Parag Agrawal responded. You know, he did this thread on May 16th in response to Musk taking on the calculations, and he tried to explain how Twitter does these calculations, how they determine what's a spam account and what's not. So let's get into that. What did you learn or what did you take away from his assessment? You know, for example, he made a point that you made, which is spam is not just binary. It's not just human or not human. These things are a lot more complicated. So did anything strike you about what Twitter explained this week?
Actually, I was surprised at how few of their accounts they were sampling to in order to determine the number of bots, because they do it by machine algorithms. Otherwise, I was like, yeah, that's pretty much what I would do if I was there, is I would sample it and I would find them and so on.
Tell me about the sampling, because I think Musk has objected to the sample size as well. So what's the sampling process?
I don't know. So I can't tell you if their sampling process is unbiased with respect to language, with respect to country. I just don't know. And I would say also that focusing on the number of bots is perhaps not a good thing to focus on, because more important than the number is how active are they and what are they active about?
Interesting. So the Twitter CEO comes out and says, you know, we've been working on this for years. We work really hard on this. It was kind of eye-opening to me how much money, time they have to put into this problem. That behind the scenes at Twitter, you know, this is a really big area of focus. But of course, he also wants people to know that because he's trying to push back on Musk, Musk challenging them. So when he says under 5%, that they think under 5% of those monthly daily active users are spam accounts, does that ring true to you? Do you have any way to assess how true that may be?
So based on all the different studies we've done, we're often seeing, you know, a number closer to 25%. But I want to qualify that in the sense that we're only looking at issues that are politically hot, or they're hot from, you know, because they're dealing with kind of life and death issue kind of level hot and things like that. If we did like random samples of stuff around things like tweets about what people are eating for dinner, we would see way fewer bots. So
right.
That's what I mean. It depends where they are. So if we're seeing 25%, that would suggest that there's, and we're not even looking at even 10% of the data out there. I would guess that, you know, the number is probably higher than 5%. And I also think it varies over time much more than they've seen it vary.
I see. Right. I feel like this debate or this discussion involving Musk is happening on two tracks, where there's one track that, you know, he tweeted out on May 17th saying, Twitter claims that more than 95% of daily active users are real, unique humans. Does anyone have that experience? And it was a poll, but it was basically a comment saying, no one believes that. Come on, Twitter. No one believes that. So if you are Elon Musk and you're looking at your replies, you're looking at the sewer of replies to your tweets, you're thinking to yourself, these can't possibly be real people. Like, you're getting to that paranoid thing I mentioned earlier, which is, this must be coordinated activity against me. It's highly personal for someone like Musk, who has millions of followers and looks at his replies and wonders who all these people are and wonders if they're real people. And so he's reacting to something that's like very personal in a way. Have you, I'm assuming you've been watching how he's been tweeting about this. Do you have a sense of where he's coming from, or do you have a take on that?
I would say that in some sense he is looking at, well, how many people following me, you know, are bots. But I think that being a savvy person, that he realizes there's a certain fraction of them are, and that he probably has more bot followers than the average person.
He attracts more of it.
A couple of years ago, Twitter had this big expunge of a huge number of bots, and all of a sudden, all the congressmen and senators' followerships went way down.
Oh, right? I remember that. Yeah.
Right? Because they deleted a whole bunch of bots. And, and Musk saw that happen, so he knows that could happen to him too.
Right-wing media has been hyping a story about President Biden's Twitter account saying half of his followers are fake. And I wonder if you have any insight into that, because my impression is, if you are a high-profile account on Twitter, many of your followers, I don't think the word is fake. I think they're inactive. They don't log in. I assume that more than half of my followers are inactive. Do we have any sense of how true that might be?
I don't have the exact numbers, but a huge numbers of the followers of most official accounts are inactive.
Yeah, so you're not reaching. It feels like everybody kind of, it's almost like a collective lie. If you're in Hollywood and you get a job because you have 10 million followers, like, come on, like no one should believe those numbers. But correct me if I'm wrong, Professor, that's a different problem than the bot issue, right? That's a different conversation.
It could be. Some of those inactive could also be bots that are just latent.
Oh, that's true. Right.
Okay. Right. But the other thing is, even of the ones that are active, a lot of those are bots, but particularly for people like Musk and, you know, for congressmen and so on, a lot of those are known bots or things like news collator bots.
What do you mean? What's that?
Well, like, there's these bots out there that collect news from a bunch of sources, collate it, and then just put out like in a condensed form.
Oh, interesting.
Right. And there's other, like, you know, there's other kind of bots like that. And there's a lot of accounts that are marked as bots that are going around doing things.
Mm. Yeah. And why don't they get removed right away by Twitter then?
Because they're, in a sense, legit bots. They're not violating the terms of service, you know. And you can buy bots to do things legitimately.
I can, but I'd rather not. All right. So as we're talking here, Musk is tweeting some more. He's saying he's on this shtick lately about, or he's on this kick lately about Republicans and Democrats. And he says, a party more moderate than all issues than either Republicans or Democrats would be ideal. Gosh, I think he might love hate Twitter too much. How do you see this going down? Do you have any sense in the weeks and months to come? No one knows what Musk is going to do. He's going to renegotiate the deal. Who knows? But is this highlighting of Twitter's bots issue? Can there be some good that comes from this? Can there be some positivity that comes from this?
Well, one positive thing that could come is that it has reawakened in many, you know, people the idea that there are bots out there and that they might be impacted by bots, which is good because, you know, I think many people forget the fact that some of those who they're following or following them aren't real, you know, and it may make some people more careful and may make them unfriend various accounts that are following them if they don't actually know those people. And that would be all to the good.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. And with your focus, with your studies, you're probably not going to tell us what you're working on right now, but are you continuing to look at phenomena like what you saw with the coronavirus in 2020? Like, should we assume at all times that there is a version of that happening where there's a message being pumped out from one political point of view that's being shared by a bot? Like, should we assume this is all very active in real time?
Yes, we should. And we should also, so we're continuing to look at bots, but we're also looking at the cyborgs that I mentioned to you. And we're also looking at the phenomena of trolls, which are actual human beings, but they're going under pseudonyms and they're trying to disrupt groups using hate speech and other forms of disruptive tactics. So we're looking at all of those activities throughout the world.
Does any of this make you want to get off the grid and just, you know, work on a farm and never get online, never use a bot, never see a bot?
No, it doesn't really want to make me want to get off the grid because I still like doing searches for information. But it does mean that I don't personally have a very active Twitter or social media presence.
Oh, why? Because you don't want to contribute to the cacophony of noise?
Exactly.
Well, thank you for slicing through it for us today. Great talking with you. Thank you so much.
It's delightful to talk to you too. Take care.
Thank you. Kathleen Carley of Carnegie Mellon University. Thanks for joining us on this week's Reliable Sources podcast. We will see you on TV this Sunday, every Sunday, 11 a.m. Eastern time on CNN. All real live humans, no bot action on CNN, Sunday, 11 a.m. Eastern time. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.